Good morning. I am Ashton Hines, one host of the Real Estate Heavyweights podcast. I am the relative newbie. I've been in the business a little over 3 years. I have my real estate license. I help investors and new home buyers and people trying to switch their homes out and sell their house and move to assisted living because I have a little bit of knowledge of that realm because I also do home health. I got my hands in social media and helping people with their podcast. I've got my hands in all sorts of different things. And luckily, I have somebody by my side who has become a super good friend and a great mentor in the real estate space. It's Tavis Westbrook, my other host here today. He comes to us with over 200 flips under his belt, a commercial building, multiple midterm and long-term rentals, and over 15 years of real estate experience in the DFW market. We come to you once a week with a DFW market update, which we'll talk about today. We talk about some of the great areas in town to invest in, what's happening with the rates, what's happening with how many houses are selling. So always tune in for that. After that, we always get into a little bit of news. And today we talk about how Dallas is landing on all sorts of lists that hint that this is a great place to live and invest. And then we dive into one topic every time about the real estate market. And today we are talking about mid-century modern, one of the true loves of Tavis Westbrook because he's done multiple projects, but also he is a sponsor of the White Rock Tour of Homes, which really specializes in the mid-century style. It's coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. We want all the people listening that are in the DFW area to go check that out. But if you have not, also check out some of the interviews we've done. We just did one with Walter Barraza. He is a global advertising agency owner. He does all sorts of amazing work. We interviewed recently Eric Crutchfield. We have tons of interviews to go back and check out. So if you have not, please do that. Also, like, subscribe, share with a friend, share the love. We put a lot of effort into these episodes, and we really want as many people as possible to know that DFW is a great place to live and invest. And so, without further ado, someone please ring that bell.
So they were trying to go for the industrial craftsman look.
For farmhouse or I think they were going for, hey, let's go see what is in the scrap pile at Home Depot look. See how cheap we can get this.
Just real quick to double on what you said. It's the 16th annual White Rock Home Tour. And this goes towards, you mentioned the elementary school. Elementary school is Dallas ISD's Hexter Elementary.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
So what's going on this week? You said you went and you walked a house. You've been walking a lot of houses. So you walked a house in Princeton. You said you might have picked one up in Carrollton. I know you're getting a little bit busier.
Yeah, we're actually executed. We're under contract in the one in Carrollton that we talked about last week. So that'll be one to kind of see how it goes. I haven't done a very light lipstick flip in a long time, and that's what this one needs to be. I think we touched base a little bit on it last time. I was said, as long as I kind of keep it down, you know, like I ran the budget and I put bigger numbers in there. Like, what if I do the master countertops? What if I rip the tub out of the master and put a stand up shower in there? And I started putting all the math to it, and I'm like, okay, and he did not do that. So yeah. You know, it's hard, you know, because I feel like those are things that are easy enough to do, but they create a snowball effect with plumbing labor, plumbing materials, you know, more tile work, et cetera. So,
yeah,
I'm just going to have to kind of take it and run through it and fix the brokenness and to take care of the things I can take care of and do it as strategic as possible to maximize the return. So
when I know you look at the comps in the area while you're doing your finding your ARV, you look at comps, you find a couple good houses that have been renovated. And mm-hmm. I know you can tell a lot from pictures and you can say, well, this one still has popcorn ceilings, for instance, or this one has the original cabinets, looks like they painted them. You can kind of get an idea of the level of renovations that are expected in that neighborhood. Do you ever go walk any of those just to kind of get an actual feel of the houses that are down the street? Is that something you still
do? I mean, if they're active, possibly, you know, but obviously if it's sold, no. But I do drive.
That would be awkward.
You know, I'll drive. Yeah.
Excuse me.
I'll be like, hey, I thought about buying this house. Can you walk me through?
Right. I'm buying a house down the street. I need to know how much it's worth, but pardon me for a second.
Yeah. I'll drive them, you know, and get like curb appeals at least to kind of see if I'm missing anything compared to what was on, you know, MLS and kind of drive it, see what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah.
The challenge with this one, and I still feel good with it based on demand, and I had to go like bigger outreach, but it's a 2-bedroom, 2-bath. So, obviously, the sweet spot is 3-bedroom, 2-bath. But there's some 3-1s over there. There's some 2-2s that are split floor plans, meaning they're a smaller 2-story home. This is a 1-story, so I feel good about that. I like the layout. Again, I helped the original client or the seller buy the house for themselves, you know, as a first-time home a couple years ago. So I know the home, feel good about it. She updated the flooring, and it used to have carpet. And so that's a nice upgrade. That's a nice feature. Obviously, I'm going to keep that. And again, she's making money on it. So it was just kind of trying to find that perfect sweet spot of like, she doesn't really want to do any more work. She doesn't want to do landscape. She doesn't want to do anything. She had a tenant living there. And what can we sell it for that would be close enough to what I think she could get selling it on the market, and can we keep the net the same with me buying it versus it going to the public market? So that was the approach on this one, and still make it work to make it make a profit. So
yeah,
we shall see how that one goes. And here's the thing, and I'm talking about a light lipstick. It's still, my budget's still $25,000, but when I started adding in those other things, it got to $35,000 really quickly. So $35,000 doesn't work. I can't spend $35,000. Like, yeah. I need to stay $25,000 and under, but it's amazing how fast it adds up.
Yeah. Well, I walked to, surely no matter what price point you do yours at, I may have mentioned this. I walked some houses last week with an investor over in Richardson. Obviously, he had been flipped. In my opinion, they were DIY type flips. One was really bad. Just craftsmanship was way off. Tile. Cracked tile in the bathrooms. It looks like they may have done their renovation and then decided to shift the foundation some and then didn't correct issues that came up after they messed with the foundation. I don't know. It was just really, you could smell some mustiness in some of the areas. It was just weird. But then another one, from pictures on Airbnb, it would look pretty cool. But when you get there, they actually had done the cabinet fronts out of plywood and painted them and put handles on them, and then they had done this epoxy finish to the countertops over wood. It was just real DIY. The rails of the stairs were 2x4s that were painted black, and then they had 1x2 stripping as their decorative what are those called, newels?
They were trying to go for the industrial craftsman look
for farmhouse, or I think they were going for, hey, let's go see what is in the scrap pile at Home Depot, look, see how cheap we can get this. There's several of those.
They had a shed in the backyard.
There's several of those shows that do well on HGTV, the no demo reno. That's actually based here. There's another show. And the whole concept is just, let's be real crafty. Let's spend as little money as possible. We're going to find paint cans in the garage and do our own mixing and just see the best we can do. Like all these things. Let's rent it. Let's refinish find on the street and all these things. And it makes for a really good show. But as being something that you do on a regular basis and to budget for, how do you budget for that? Yeah. That you budget for something and then you just hope the next 2 or 3 weeks while you're driving around, you find a pile of decent lumber or something that you can turn upside down and spray paint yellow and make a table. Right? It just seems really bizarre, but it makes for good TV. Well, and I think some people look at that and they say, heck yeah, I can do that. And then you get a flip that sits on the market.
Well, and what's their time in that, right?
Yeah.
And then I walked another one. I walked another one yesterday. I don't want to jinx it. We'll hope. It smells like it could work. The guy's got enough equity in it. Convenience deal, direct to seller. Garland Home, funky floor plan, though. A lot of homes over there in one story. This is a two story. All bedrooms are up. It actually has, I don't know if you know this, and actually this is a good lead in into our conversation today about mid-century modern. This was a 70s build, but this has a built-in conversation pit. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes, I've seen them. I've been in several houses with built-in conversation pit. They're also really good for tripping and breaking your hip when you're about 70 years old. So careful with that one.
What I don't like about this one is it's like the whole... I don't know if it was intended to be the dining room, and then you step down into the conversation pit where the fireplace is. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is elevated. Hmm. So like from the main floor, you go up two or three steps, and then it's like a platform, like a stage almost, is built all the way across. And it's like, okay, is that the dining space? It's supposed to be elevated. And then you step down into the conversation pit. So that's going to be one of those things I have to get really creative on to either keep it and make it work, which I have actually been successful in a couple homes with fire conversation pits. The last one I did, I just filled it in with concrete and made it work that way, and it was fine, and you never missed it because it took up so much of the main living space. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to look at it. I mean, the numbers, but I mean, the guy was very understanding when we had a conversation, and he's already bought another home. So there's motivating factors there. So we'll see what happens with that one.
Indoor hot tub. That would make a great little spot for an indoor hot tub just right there in the middle of the dip down.
Great.
It is interesting to think back of, you know, you had the conversation pit, you had the wet bar, which was huge in the 70s and 80s. I guess maybe now, honestly, I was trying to think what would be that case now. What are people going to walk into in 20 years and say, roll their eyes and say, they did this in every house and we've got to figure this out. Sometimes I think it's media rooms, although that's very easily transferable to something else, an office or a bedroom, something like that. But I know a lot of homes now, especially the model homes, they'll trick them out with a really cool media room. We have one technically upstairs. We rarely use it. Very rarely. It's just out of the way. It's just not something that we get a lot of use out of, but it looked really cool in the model home and everyone gets excited. So I don't know. I don't know what features you think these days will be an eye roll in 20 years. But back then, the conversation pit and the wet bar, and we've talked about the shelf, you know, the open air sort of over the doorway, the transoms where you have mm-hmm. a lot of space above that, or maybe even totally open, or a huge shelf to awkwardly put mm-hmm. a fake vine up on or something like that. There was just a lot of interesting architecture. And we are going to talk about architecture later in the show. Mid-century modern, Tavis's specialty. We wanted to dive deep on that for special reasons. We have something coming up this next in 2 weekends that the White Rock home tour is coming up. And we wanted to really talk about mid-century. So we'll get there. But we will get into that in a second. Why don't we go ahead and dive a little bit into our market update? Not a lot has changed as far as the actual numbers. The days on market average are between 45 and 50. We were looking at median for a while, but the average days on market right now are a little creeping up. If you look at it from that perspective, they are closer to the 45, 50, depending on where you are. Collin County says 35, and Collin County 41, Dallas is 35. Months of supply are creeping up as well. We talked about that last week. Months of supply have crept up. Actual transactions, pending sales, closed sales are going down. So there's more and more out there. So you would think that would hint that it's turning into a little bit more of a buyer's market maybe because it's equalizing some. But we still only have 3.2 months of supply, which is traditionally low. Some people say 4 months, some people say 6 months is a balanced market, but we are 3.2 and it is trending upward. I do feel like they keep talking about dropping these rates, and when it happens, people are going to rush into the market. I've had this conversation recently with several people. The irony of people rushing into the market, I do feel like it will have this sort of at least short-term spike in prices, and your net mortgage may be very similar because you're going to get a slightly lower interest rate, but the house might be a little bit more expensive, or maybe they're not going to do as much on the concession side during the inspection period, but your net that you go to get into your mortgage with, I think very likely could be similar. And the weird part about that is it's almost like this mental win. Hey, I got a really good rate. Everyone's talking about the rates are high. But now your mortgage is going to be similar and the base price of your house, which is what your insurance and taxes are based on, is higher. So it's an odd mental space to be in, but it sure seems like a lot of people are just waiting around for these rates to drop. But the economics of it, especially when supply is lower, is going, the prices should go up if it's a well, you know, if it's a good house and good area and all that sort of thing. But I think that's probably what's going to happen. Is that sort of what you're thinking?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because my nephew called me, I believe Friday, and, you know, him and his wife got married back in December. And, you know, they're now in a position to buy a house. And of course, that was his question. Hey, do you think now's a good time or should we wait? Of course, my conversation is now's the time, right? Like, I mean, I think in any situation, I mean, you've got to take advantage of the situation for what it is. I mean, if it makes sense for you, you know, their lease is up in 60 days. So they're feeling a little bit of the pressure there. They got options, but they're like, hey, I think it's time. And then we could always refi later when the rates go down. And I'm like, yeah, I think you're thinking right. So anyways, we, you know, starting the journey with them. Well, we just kind of did a quick little dive in on Friday, kind of just scoping out, seeing what was out there and kind of looking for them. And, you know, first time home buyer, they want to be Plano, Richardson, up to 450, which
that's a good budget. Again,
is mind-boggling though, you know, that this is the first time price point.
Yep.
And I'll tell you that the good ones go quick.
Yep.
I mean, we've said this a million times before, but, you know, in fact, yesterday we kind of revisited, you know, we were able to kind of meet up for a little bit and go look at one. And, you know, there was one that popped up and I was like, hey, this is a good one, you know, and he was excited and he goes, yeah, but there's a comment in there. Again, you know, we talk about, you know, technology now. I mean, he's seen these comments on the public website and I missed it. I missed the remark, I guess, that was edited back in MLS. And there was a deadline of 5 o'clock Monday, multiple offers, you know, and I must have missed it in between looking at it and seeing that it was a couple of days on the market, 3-4 days. So anyways, any of these good ones, man, that listed this weekend, you know, for the weekend, all had multiple offers. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, 5-6 of them that we looked at that were all multiple offers under contract that, I mean, were good properties that were listed at the right price with the right amenities, the right, you know, staging, you know, had the right attraction to it. There were multiple offers.
Yeah.
So again, we're still in a really healthy, strong market if you know what you're doing in the marketing side of things. And then the other ones that are kind of sitting on the market, you know, there was a reason for it. Yeah. We went and looked at one yesterday that bounced back on the market and then they priced it low. And again, pictures look pretty good. We went and walked it and we see a bunch of bumps and bruises, you know, we're like, okay. And they had it priced down now as is, I guess their story was, it was an FHA buyer. They had something come up that was outside of anything to do with the house and they had to terminate, job loss, whatever. I mean, something, personal reasons for the buyer, but you know, there were some bumps and bruises. I mean, you talked earlier about these flips. And I don't know if this was a flip before and maybe it was a rental because it had a little bit of wear and tear. But I mean, like they put closet doors in the closets and didn't paint them, you know, things like that. It was like either a punch list thing or it was an inspection thing. And it was like, come on, guys, you know, finish this thing out.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Well, that 450 is a good, you know, I've been looking with a lot of the investors in that realm, really actually lower than that. I think they could find something decent. One thing, too, is finding that thing that sort of fell through the cracks, made it through that initial push for whatever reason. Maybe they're overpriced. Maybe there's a few flaws. But that's something where you can come in handy and say, look, people are kind of scared away from this one because of this. We can fix this quick. You know, we can do this. We can ask for a little bit of price off because once they start sitting, they get a little bit of that stigma. But yeah, I had a long conversation. It's kind of fun. I have an investor from London. So our time difference is weird. So we had a conversation this morning at 6 a.m. about 45 minutes going through a map, really diving deep into some, we're looking at rental comps, he's really looking at the Sherman area, Sherman, Melissa, Anna, Princeton, and trying to get an idea of growth and that sort of thing. You can find some decent things in the 300 to 350 range through there, especially up into Sherman. If you're, I know they don't want to live in Sherman, but we were looking at Princeton, and I was trying to decipher Princeton with him. To me, it started with this little bitty town, not, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, and now just exploded. A lot of the houses that went in early seem to be pretty affordable, really close together, very much track homey. So that's the type of place that in another 10 years, it's hard to really guess how it's going to age. And from an investment standpoint or living, I don't think it's going to be bad. I don't know that the appreciation is going to be as good as other places, but it's hard to deny. People see these listings over in Princeton and Greenville, for instance, a little bit further east, but on I-30. It's really hard to walk away from, but just long-term growth, I don't know. I don't know where you stand on Princeton, because I've just had a lot of people ask about it, and I know it's hard to turn down.
I think that's a perfect example of like an area that has turned into a heavy rental community, you know, and I think that's sometimes where HOAs come in handy, because you see the effects of it being a lot of rentals that people don't necessarily care about it being a rental property. So they're not keeping up with the yards. They're not keeping up with, you know, deferred maintenance. I mean, this one I walked yesterday was in Princeton, built in 2005. We kind of got excited about it before we went, because, you know, again, a shout out to Dakota. He was very excited, by the way, that we mentioned his name on the podcast last week. So I'll shout out to you again, because
he's one of your investors.
He's an avid listener.
Right. Yes. Y'all teamed up on a project or two.
Yeah. He's put some money in some deals and he's learning, but he wants to get, you know, he wants to grow his portfolio and get his first rental. And so anyways, you know, he's kind of the same thing. Sherman, Denison, you know, we've talked about it, but it's further up there. And a lot of them are older, you know, so I kind of haven't been really on board of supporting him and buying a, you know, sub 80s house, if you will, and a lot of them are sub 60s houses.
Yeah.
So I haven't really been on board. Well, this one popped up, 2005 build, you know, this came actually out of Trelli. It's a wholesale deal. Got excited about it and went over there and looked at it. And it was funny. One of those things, you walk up on the front porch, we haven't even made it in the door yet, and you just smell dog. Okay, I know what we're walking into here. You can smell it before you ever open the front door. And then we go in, and of course, it was just, I don't know how many dogs they had in there. Could have been one, could have been two, but pretty rough. Yeah. And I think it was probably a rental before based on the overall condition, but it had one section in the middle of the house that was all, that was wood floor, like engineered floor, and it was just saturated in dog pee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could tell that it was used to go number two for the dogs.
Oh, good.
And the house had been cleaned out, but oh my gosh.
They cleaned up, you know, for you.
At 3 foot, the 3 foot mark all the way around all of the walls. Of course, they were originally painted in flat finish, you know, you could just see the rub mark from the dogs. Gosh. And then you walk in the backyard where actually you're staring right through the house and you see the neighbor's house. You're like, wait a minute. You go, the whole fence is gone in between you and the neighbor behind you. And you're like, surely that can't be tolerated very long, right? Between neighbors of not having a fence there. And it'd been that way a while. You could kind of tell. So they must have been a tenant behind you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so anyways, that was one of the downsizes, but you and I were talking a little bit and kind of getting in this conversation. The concern I have when I looked up, even in a half mile radius, and in a lot of cases, when you look for rental comps, I got to go out like a mile radius within the last 90 days to see anything. Sometimes I got to go back 180 days to get some comps. With this thing, man, I pulled up half mile radius and dude, it was like three pages of data. Mm. Like it was active listings, probably 20 of them. And then it was, you know, some pendings. And then it was the, you know, the leased out comps within 90 days. It was like, holy crap. Yeah. So, I mean, you have to be very competitive and you're competing with a lot of newer builds there too.
It might be kind of what Little Elm was for a while, and sort of the cheapest way to get close to town. And now Little Elm is turning over, and a lot of those are being flipped, and or there's a lot of newer, nicer neighborhoods being built close by. So I feel like Little Elm is turning, and it can happen.
I think Little Elm's a perfect example. I think the Colony is a perfect example of that. You know, the Colony's kind of been that, you know, many, many years of lower income, lower entry point,
Fox and
you know,
Jacob.
Getting in there. And, you know, they were easy to rent. Your sandwich, you know, the Colony's always been a great rental pocket because everything around there within a 2 mile radius was much more expensive. Mm-hmm. So it was like this little pocket where you could get in where the rents were cheap. That's all changing over. And then because of what the values have done, now it's become this turnover of entry level home ownership. So you are seeing more pride there. You do still see some rentals and stuff in there, but because the price points are getting so high, you know, once they reach over that $400,000 threshold, then, you know, the rental pocket doesn't make as much sense, right? Yeah. We've talked about that before, but Princeton's still creeping up to like that 300 price point, mm-hmm. you know, where like what we looked at yesterday was like a 320, 330 ARV. Yeah. You could buy it in the low twos, rents for $2,000 a month. Not sexy, but it could work.
Well, I've got I got one I'll send you up in Sherman. It's a 2000 build, 4-bedroom. Looks like it's really decent and in a decent neighborhood. I was going to drive up there this weekend, and it's 300.
Okay.
Rents show to be 2400. So I'll send it to you because that might be something for you. My guy, he's looking up there, but he may not be ready to pull the trigger just yet. But
I mean, you give that 300 number and it blows the numbers out, right? I mean, the attraction of this one was the entry cost was going to get into it for 225, 235.
Right.
And rents were 2000. It gets a little crazier, you know, or a little crazier, a little closer. Mm-hmm. But when we walked it, I mean, your minimum rental turnover would be $30,000 on that thing.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
You know.
That's what I'm saying. Sherman, I think long-term appreciation, and this looked like a pretty decent neighborhood. So, well.
Yeah.
Why don't we touch a little bit on news, and then I want to get into our discussion on mid-century.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official.
There's good news and bad news.
This is a massive story. Who wouldn't publish it?
Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
The news of the day is basically kind of what we've been talking about. Dallas has made several lists this last week. It was listed in one of the commercial CBRE, listed it as the number one market for 2024 for returns in the commercial world. It was listed as the number two, Collin County, which is in just north of Dallas County. It's called Plano and where we live, Plano, McKinney, Frisco, all that. It was ranked the number two fastest growing county in the state, in the country, but the other one was in the state, Harris County, which is Houston. So, but then the DFW area made the top of the list for overall. It added technically in the realm of 153,000 people last year, and Collin County was the fastest growing county. And now north of that, you have Denton, and you're going up towards Sherman, Denison. It's just going to keep on going that way. So we made the top of several lists, which just hint that super strong market. There's things moving. You can still make money. The commercial people are still coming in. JLL, which is also a huge commercial builder, I think a rental broker. I don't know that they build, but rental, JLL, they're a big broker. And they were saying that the commercial market's still pretty strong. It's not moving backwards. It's holding strong. There's a lot of things being rented out. Of all the new builds that are coming online, they estimated 69% have already been pre-leased. So it's just a very healthy market for commercial. And it's also a lot of new builds are happening, a lot of people coming to town. So if you can crack the code, find your little niche, of either flipping or doing the infill work or finding a rental, people are moving here and putting money into the economy. It's just a matter of how do you fit yourself into that equation as an investor and try to take advantage of that and make your money. So it's definitely happening. trying to figure it out is the trick. Trying to figure out your niche that you can become an expert in, and a little part of town you can be an expert in, is tough. I will say Austin has taken a hit in the news the last few months of, oh, how it's difficult and prices are dropping and this is bad and blah, blah, blah. Megan and Dustin just picked up their second or third flip in a row down there. They're doing great. They've picked up multiple flips over the last 12 months. Dustin is helping as a broker for another flipper who's done, I think, 8 to 10 properties down there. So any market, you can find ways to make money. It's the math is simple. If you buy something cheap enough and sell it for enough, you can make money. The trick is finding those people who need to sell cheap and then doing a good enough job on the back end, renovating it well enough to be able to sell it at top dollar. And people who know what they're doing can figure it out. Really proud of them. They've done an awesome job, and they're loyal listeners. And so thank you for that. I think they're probably Shout a lot out. Of their knowledge is coming from us. They won't say that out loud, but I think a lot of their success is probably coming from all the stuff they're distilling from this podcast. So
well,
thank you.
For shout that. Out to you guys, and thank you.
Yes. So. Thank you for being loyal supporters. So why don't we do this? The big news for us is the White Rock Tour of Homes. Is that the official name of it, Tavis? The White Rock Tour of Homes?
White Rock Home Tour.
2024. It's a mid-century modern home tour over there by the White Rock Lake. If you don't know where that is, central Dallas, but just a little bit east. East Dallas, Lake Highlands, Casa Linda, Casa View, all that stuff over there. Beautiful part of town. The lake is a gem that we have. We don't have a lot of natural resources. We don't have a ton of hiking and proximity to mountains and beaches, but White Rock Lake really is awesome. They've done a tremendous job with hiking trails and biking trails. You can get out on the lake and you can get do the paddle boarding and the rowing and all that. It's beautiful. We have the Dallas Arboretum, which is right there on the lake. It's an amazing spot to go check out. That being said, the neighborhoods around there are older. It's an older part of Dallas. People who owned them originally probably had a little bit of money. There's some really decent houses over there. And a lot of them have been renovated, restored, that sort of thing. And the White Rock Home Tour is something that Tavis has taken part in for several years now. We've talked about it a few times. He had a home that was on the tour at one point, and he is a sponsor. So we wanted to talk about that, give you a heads up. It's not this coming weekend, but the next weekend. So we wanted this podcast to play for a whole week. Anyone that's local that's hearing this needs to go to this tour. It costs a little bit of money. It benefits a local elementary school. Totally worth it. You're going to go to 7 or 8 houses. You kind of hop around. You can pay at any of the houses. You don't have to go in any particular order. You just show up, get your ticket, your band, do the tour, and then go to the next house. You don't have to go to all of them. It's just kind of guide yourself, and it's a lot of fun. So we are going to be doing that. We may try to throw it out on social that we're going to do a little meetup afterwards at a bar, coffee shop, or something like that to discuss all the things that we saw. And to that end, Tavis is my local expert on mid-century modern. And I wanted to just talk about that idea, that concept, what it means, sort of the hallmarks of that architecture style and that sort of thing. So Tavis, why don't you take us into a little bit of the basics of the mid-century style?
Sure. Just real quick to double on what you said, it's the 16th annual White Rock Home Tour. And this goes towards, you mentioned the elementary school. Elementary school is Dallas ISD's Hexter Elementary. So this has been a very successful event that's gone on for the last 16 years. They missed a couple years due to COVID, but it is back, and this is the 16th annual. It is the weekend of April 20th and 21st, and there is 6 amazing homes that will be on the tour. So yes, please get your ticket. You can go online, you can go on Facebook, and I would love to see you guys there and hear all about it. So diving right into mid-century architecture. So a lot of people kind of confuse the two. Anything, obviously, mid-century was things that were built between the 50s and the 60s, and, you know, primarily, you know, focused on things that were built here in the United States, although this architecture did exist across the world. And there's some cool stuff that I've seen in New Zealand and Australia as well. Nevertheless, some really, really iconic things. Obviously, there's famous architecture that you've seen and heard about across the across the globe. One of the developers that I really enjoy that was very popular out in the West Coast was Joseph Eichler, also commonly known as the Eichler Homes. These were a lot of times track homes that were built back then, but I really enjoy the architecture that they brought forth. And again, this is kind of talking the modern side of mid-century modern architecture. You also have, homes built during the mid-century that were considered mid-century ranches and things like that. So we'll see a lot of those pop up here in our area as well as other areas across the United States. And those can be very cool too. They're just going to be a little different as far as the architectural design. I've been privy to have a few homes that one of my favorite styles is called post and beam. A post and beam style home is basically where you have supportive posts that then support a cross member or an exposed beam up in the ceiling. And basically, you could take all of the walls down in between these post and beam structure, and the house would stand, right? The roof is cascaded out. So very much like what you would think of like a big covered patio, for instance.
Okay.
You have these posts supporting the cross members, and then you have the joists running against them, and then you have the roof structure on top. Well, in that case, it's just open air, right? But what they did is they installed glass instead, right? And so you just have this big open space with a lot of glass. Now, in my theory is this, and I don't know this 100%, but I believe, a lot of these homes were built post-war. So after the 1940s and during the baby booming time frame, and so a lot of developments were initiated out of this, right, where they had to come up with housing. People coming back from the war, they needed to mass produce different areas of homes. In mid-century, modern architecture was relatively inexpensive to build at the time. Again, they would build these, post and beam style homes and then fill the spaces with glass. And they were very simplistic and almost to a point where they could almost just build this thing from a box, right? Like kind of like how we think of IKEA today. And in some cases, there were kits that were developed. Another very famous one that we see here, it's made its way. We see them over in East Dallas. There's a kind of a cluster of them. But again, they were developed out in the West Coast in California. That's called Cliff May. So if you ever look up Cliff May architecture, you'll see these were kind of like little kit homes. Again, not very big. I mean, they might span between...
Is that off of 635 near TI? Is that little enclave right there? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's going to be... off of Ferguson, like East Dallas, Ferguson, and I'm trying to think of the crossroad that way, but there's a little pocket of these Cliff Mays over there.
Okay.
And some of them have gone for a really good penny. Some are pretty rough. There's been also several that people have just destroyed them, meaning they try to traditionalize them. They go in there and instead of playing off of what that original modern feel was, they
go Chip and Joanna on it and put like some shiplap up.
Yeah, I didn't want to throw them under the bus, but that's... I didn't want to throw them under the bus, but yes, exactly that. If you've seen some of Chip and Joanna's work, And you saw a mid-century home that was converted to this very cottage-style traditional home with about a lot of reclaimed wood. Yes, there you go. So, nevertheless, a lot of it was built in simplistic mindset. They were very, very simple to put together. The glass was, in my opinion, at the time, very inexpensive. Mind you, these were like single-pane glass windows. Now, of course, the reverse of that is now glass is very expensive, and that's why you don't see as much glass anymore in these homes. Also, energy efficiency is another reasoning for that, but you could do it, but the houses with a lot of glass today are very expensive because there has to be a lot of engineering that goes behind to make it energy efficient. So nevertheless, one of the coolest things with me when I started getting into this, and mind you, I had flipped a couple mid-century modern homes built in the 60s, one in the 58, I believe, in Richardson Heights on James Drive. Then my next big one was on Timber Grove Circle in Oak Cliff, also Stevens Park Golf Course area. And that was 63. And then, of course, my flagship was 1963 house built on Custer Parkway in Richardson. You know, these were the three big ones that I had touched. And when we got into Little Forest Hills, I wanted to build, you know, new homes that were influenced by that architecture and kind of create these mid-century modern motifs, or, you know, what you call this century modern. So we flew out to Palm Springs and went out there and kind of went through old homes, new homes, things that were money no object up on a mountain, more of production builds, and just kind of got a library of ideas. Snapped a lot of pictures, got a lot of different influence, really kind of got a lot of these elements and these little tricks and little things that were being done there almost on every single home. For instance, like using no door trim, you know, it would just be sheetrock terminated right to the door frame.
Okay.
And that was very popular there. And you saw that almost in every house. And that's something you don't see here, right? Trim is actually used to hide imperfections, so it makes it more complicated.
Yeah, I was about to say, my sheetrock guys that I've figured out, when a sheetrock guy walks up to you on the street and is not busy, and he says he could start today, he's probably not the guy to go after your mid-century no trim door or your level 5 sheetrock, you know, that's super, super smooth. So I have learned that much so far. If
you'll be very disappointed,
approaching you in the parking lot of Home Depot, this is probably not your guy.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I ran into a client that had a Cliff May house, and she was in a situation. She had to get out of it. She loved the home, but they're in the middle of a divorce, and she had to get out of it and make a certain dollar. And she came to me first, and I appreciated that, but I just couldn't make the numbers work. I'm like, I just can't do it. There's not enough there. Again, it's that Ferguson area I talked about in East Dallas, and the house was only like 1,100 square feet. You know, I just couldn't make the numbers work. And so she tells me afterwards, you know, somebody else got it done. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, congrats. And she's like, I think he's going to hold it as a rental. I'm like, okay, man, it's a negative cash flow thing, but all right, it makes sense. Well, she introduced me to this guy like 2 days ago during the eclipse party. And I'm like, oh, you're holding it for a rental, huh? And he goes, no, I can't make the numbers work. I'm going to have to flip it. I'm like, okay. So, I mean, we'll see, you know, how it turns out. Yeah. I mean, I know too much.
Yeah.
I know too much, and I'm a purist when it comes to doing them right.
Well, some of the other hallmarks that I think of is like, and that are expensive is exposed wood, probably a lot of walnut, probably teak back then, both very expensive, yep. A lot of natural, it was minimalist, but the glass and the view outside, a lot of really good landscaping, and a lot of natural wood on the inside, which all those elements are super expensive. I'm not sure exactly on the terrazzo tile was also pretty big. I don't know what you would call it, but terrazzo looks like just a bunch of pebbles that are then smoothed down and then cut into sheets and then smoothed down. And it looks really, really cool. But you see a lot of terrazzo tile in those style of homes and the exposed wood from countertop. I'm sure laminate was the thing back then. They weren't really doing natural countertops. These days, I would imagine you would go with something pretty sharp, clean line, quartz or something like that. You wouldn't do granite or probably marble or anything in a modern, mid-century modern or a renovation that way. But they're really big on the square tiles, right? The probably 3-inch square tiles or something like that, 4-inch square tiles, a lot of your pinks and yellows and, you know, the traditional 1950s and 60s look, the stone fireplace, a lot of times your stacked stone without the mortar, that those look super cool. Anything stacked stone outside, stacked stone fireplaces. And then you had your Danish furniture movement, super minimals, minimalist. You have the Eames. I don't know where Eames is from, but your Eames chair, which we were joking with Walter about our last interview. If he has a mid-century, you're obligated to have an Eames chair. He has the fake Eames or the Themes. And that's a very iconic chair, the lounge chair with the wood on the outside and the leather, real cushy on where you're sitting, but it's kind of rounded and smooth, super cool. And actually, I'm a fan of watches. And there's a movement around that same era called the Bauhaus movement, which came up from Germany. Mm-hmm. But it's a similar minimal aesthetic. Nomos Galschutte is a watch these days. Jungens is also another one. It's just, you look at those watches and you're almost like, what am I paying for here? Because it's just so simple and clean. But a lot of people just really like that. It's functional. It was really a lot about function. You're not doing a lot of frilly, but it became this refined. The trick was to refine it down with function, but it was still beautiful and it's aged really, really well. And that's what makes these things valuable now, is because they've aged so well and they're still beautiful.
A lot of the elements from the curb appeal would be a low slung roof, even a flat roof, but very, very low pitches, you know, kept at a very low profile feel, and then lots of natural light. A lot of times you might create privacy from the main road. So there might be, you know, a screen wall, might be a brick wall all the way across, maybe very lack of windows facing the front of the home. Mm-hmm. You might just see some transom windows, but you're not going to necessarily see right into the home mm-hmm. from the street. And once you get into the home, then you have the elements of courtyards and big open glass and big open space. And the idea was a lot of these were smaller homes, right? A lot of the stuff that you see is like 1500 square feet or smaller, but it was blending the lines between the inside and the outside of the home. So the home appeared much bigger, and you're using the elements of outside to be part of your usable space of the inside, right? So it was merging those lines in between inside and outside.
And I've walked those houses. Last year, I walked the houses. They're not just small square footage. They're the scale of all the stuff in that era of home is tiny. They're not made for me. The kitchen, the space between the countertops, the doorways going into bathrooms, the stairs going up. I feel very self-aware when I am in those houses, because I just feel like I am taking up twice the amount of space as I would be taking up in another house. In the one Frank Lloyd Wright house I went into, the same thing. Just, I did not belong in that house. It was just made for a different type of person. And the scale was so, so small. So if you did one today, you'd have to adjust to the modern person who's a real estate heavyweight podcaster.
Well, that was what was so great about, you know, the ones that we did, in Little Forest Hills was, you know, we did 8 foot or 10 foot plate heights, right? So you started with a bigger wall to begin with versus, an 8 foot plate, things like that. And obviously big spaces between your counter spaces and the kitchen and things like that, you know, that make a lot more flow. Even though it was like a 2,500 square foot home, when you walked it, because of the way we developed it with all the natural light coming in and the courtyards and everything else, it felt like a 3,500 square foot home because of your ceiling heights and the natural light and all the windows and everything else. Yep. So
cool. Well, cool, man. I appreciate your insight. I know you've spent a lot of time researching this, and there's a lot of great Instagram accounts that's all they do is show mid-century modern homes. There's actually several that are based in Dallas. There's a realtor that's all she does is find mid-century modern homes and goes and tours them. It's really neat to follow. And then of course, Palm Springs, there's parts all over the Midwest. I followed a Midwest account for a while, just in the middle of nowhere, Illinois. There's this really cool mid-century modern home, and this person would go find them. So it's fun to kind of explore, see the aesthetic, see the color schemes. And it really is neat to figure that out around here. Even my last one on Mapleton was a mid-century ranch, and we did a cool job of paying a little homage to that era without completely breaking the bank. We had some natural wood, and we tried to hint at it with some of the colors that we used, trying to bring back that era somewhat, honor the era somewhat. So, well, that will be today's show. If you have not liked, subscribe, please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, share this with a friend. We are expanding. We have our YouTube channel now. Our views have gone up a little bit. Every time someone shares it with someone and then they share it with someone, it's super helpful. It's really cool to see the fact that we've been listened to in several different countries. And that's always an excitement on our part. So please do us a favor. We have a lot of loyal listeners. If you have not yet, please share it with a friend. Just say, hey, I think you would like this. Or I know you're looking for a house in Dallas. Or, hey, I know you're a real estate agent. And these guys talk about a lot of cool things around Dallas. Just send it for us. And that would really do a lot for us. Check out the home tour. Look at the link. We'll post it in the description of this one. And we'd love to see you out there. We pay attention to our social. We'll try to do a meetup with folks that are local and talk about some of the homes we see. And I'm sure it'll be a great time. So all that. Until next time. Have a great day.